You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. 2018 is shaping up to be a particularly bright year for fireflies. They seem to be everywhere this year. As you watch them flit around your backyard at night, don't you find yourself wondering just how does that firefly do it? What makes him glow like that? Chemistry professor A. Paul Scopp asked himself the very same question as he worked for years in his lab at Wayne State University, searching for the molecule that is the essence of this bioluminescence. And he finally found the answer in July 1986. That aha moment allowed him to grow a company and from that to become one of Michigan's honored philanthropists. Dr. A. Paul Scopp, welcome back to Stateside.
Well, Cindy, thank you. It's good to be back.
When did you first begin wondering about the firefly and what made it glow? How old were you?
Well, it's fair to say that, like a lot of children growing up, and our family was in northern Indiana, where there are a lot of fireflies out in the country, that we would catch them, my brother and I, and put them in a jar, let them go eventually, but certainly was wondering how they did that luminescence and how they were able to flash, which was even more interesting, that they can control that luminescence. So I went to Hope College and majored in chemistry, then on to Harvard in 1967. I went there and finished in 1970. But my graduate work at Harvard involved studying how to make molecules of the type that the firefly uses for its luminescence.
So you started the chase, the scientific chase.
Well, it was a worldwide interest in trying to make these types of molecules and mimic what the firefly does.
And you came to teach and to do research at Wayne State University in Detroit, and you actually brought your students into your work, right? What did it take through the years as you tried to isolate that molecule?
Well, you certainly work as a team in scientific groups, and ours was in the Department of Chemistry, and you develop a team of undergraduate chemistry students, graduate students, postdoctoral students who have gotten their degree, PhD degree somewhere else, and you form a team. And the team is focused, if you will, on an area of science, in our case, chemiluminescence, and trying to make, and we did make, numerous of these dioxetane molecules. That's what the firefly uses. No one, by the way, has ever isolated the particular dioxetane of the firefly. It's thought to be very, very unstable.
Interesting.
But what we were interested in, as well as others at other institutions, was trying to make these molecules synthetically and produce molecules that have had various desirable properties.
What kind of properties? What were you looking for?
Well, there are three, really. Stability, being able to store the chemical compound at room temperature, being able to then trigger its luminescence, almost like the firefly does, be able to flash or to have a long glow if that's what was desired. And almost most importantly is to have efficient chemiluminescence or efficient light formation. Those were the three goals in our work as well as others trying to do it.
And Dr. Skep, what was the long picture? What was the goal of that? What did you realize that if you got that molecule isolated, what could be done with it?
It certainly was understood that being able to make luminescence would have practical applications. I mean, a very simple one is emergency lighting. But eventually, these compounds that we were able to make became useful in medical testing. And that turned out to be a very important application.
So how many years' worth of work did it take until you had that aha moment and realized you had created the right chemiluminescent molecule?
Almost 20 years. From the time as a graduate student at Harvard that I was able to make my first one of these dioxetanes, which, by the way, at that point was very unstable, almost to the point of being explosive, generated very little light. You'd have to go in a dark room to be able to even see it. And then through the work of our group at Wayne State, it was almost 20 years to finally get to that aha moment in July of 1986.
And here we are, 1986. There is no such thing as incubators. There was no tech town, but there was a company
isn't that the truth? Yes.
So how did you get your company, Lumigen, off the ground?
I went to the vice president of research at Wayne State and described what we had discovered. And you're absolutely right. There was no tech town. There was the Michigan Center for High Technology, the old Kresge building, which was attempting to be an incubator, but it wasn't very successful and wasn't going to work for us. So the university became a shareholder in Lumigen, the company that I started at that time, and leased some of our laboratory space, my academic laboratory space, back to the company, and also part of my own office. And that was very helpful to let us get started and incubate the company there in the Department of Chemistry.
And certainly the company, Lumigen, went on to become one of the world's biggest suppliers of chemiluminescent materials used in the immunodiagnostics market. So lives are being saved because of what you found in isolating that molecule.
I think that's fair to say. And Lumigen still exists today and it's doing very well out in Southfield, Michigan.
Well, and you sold the company in 2006 for, what was it, $185 million?
A little bit north of that.
A little bit north of that. All right. And that has let you now spend your life focusing on philanthropy. You and your wife, Carol, created the A. Paul Skop Foundation. And, I mean, we could be talking for a long, long time, this list of who and what you've supported. I know you were part of the foundations that gave money to help the city of Detroit out of bankruptcy.
We were. We were part of the first part, if you will, of the grand bargain. And that was an exciting development to be able to help the Detroit Institute of Arts and also the pensioners to try and lessen the hurt that they were going to feel.
You gave money, I know, to remodel the chemistry buildings at Hope and at Wayne State. You give scholarships to students at all levels, and you do so much more. And I'm just wondering, what's the overall goal of your philanthropy? I mean, how do you and Carol want to make a difference in Michigan?
Well, it's all about education and scholarships in various ways, both to students and faculty. And I think the driver of that, Cindy, is my own experience going to Hope College. My dad was a Presbyterian minister, certainly didn't have money to send me to college. And I could only get there because of scholarships from people I didn't even know. And that's always stuck with me.
And you're paying it forward today. I guess, what's your message to someone who has that same idea, same question you had, and is in that process of going through those years of searching for that scientific answer?
Oh, science by any means. And it might sound, as we're talking, that you could start at the very beginning and have a vision, a straight line to the final end, and that's not the case at all. Science doesn't work that way. It's a zigzag road, a lot of dead ends, and you keep doing experiments, and you learn from the experiments to continue on down the road.
And it's not unfair to say you've been able to do an awful lot of good in our state thanks to a tiny firefly.
Well, that's I think, appropriate.
Dr. A. Paul Skop, thank you so very much for spending time with us on Stateside.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And to hear yesterday's conversation about why there are so many fireflies in our backyards right now when they seem to be declining around the world, just head to the Stateside page at michiganradio.org.